Welcome back to East Meets West. I'm Olga.
I'm Tara Reid, and we have a special show for you today. We were able to have someone for the first time in our studio with
in
us.
Person.
I'm very proud to be that person, Tara.
Yes, and George Galloway, for those of you who live under a rock, if you don't know who he is, a former parliamentarian. He took on the U.S. Congress years ago about Iraq by himself, and he won, in my opinion, when they were trying to lie about weapons of mass destruction. So thank you so much, George Galloway, for joining us.
It's an honor, honestly. Yeah. I'm a big admirer of the show. On that Senate occasion, I was Daniel in the lion's den, but they weren't really lions. They thought that they were lions, but they didn't think so by the end of it.
No.
But that's a long time ago now. It's 20 years ago, you know.
But don't you feel like we're in deja vu?
It's like the history repeats itself. Yes. Yeah. With no lessons
life,
learned.
I was born not that long after the Second World War, and just in the ashes of the Korean War. And when I look back at my life now, it's been one long bloody war. And I've been opposing all of them. So war, imperialist war, has been the leitmotif of my life. And as you say, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure rhymes.
It certainly does. I mean, one of the arguments was there was Iran was 2 weeks away from getting a nuclear weapon. And I know with the Iraq case, they were shouting the same things.
Same thing, yeah.
What are your thoughts about Iran?
Because now it
Iran.
Seems the U.S. is close to putting boots on the ground. Yeah. It seems they're very close to it. What do you think of that?
Who can tell what Trump is intending, including himself? I don't think he knows what he's intending. I actually am one of those who thinks that Donald Trump is now in a medical state of, I don't know whether it's senility or some kind of more temporary affliction, but his cognitive performance has declined spectacularly over the last few weeks. And he gives all the impression of a man who almost doesn't know where he is. I mean, it's bizarre that you've had two presidents like that.
With sundowners.
In a row.
Yeah.
That he doesn't appear to know the difference between truth and falsehood, and that's a very dangerous place. Look, politicians can spin things, but when you've got someone claiming hourly that he's in negotiations.
I was going to ask about the same thing, because it's like terrible when the head of state says he's in negotiations with the head of the state of Iran. He doesn't know the name, he cannot give the name, he cannot give the position. He just says, that most important guy, doesn't it look for you as, you know, a pupil who is trying to perform at an exam but doesn't know the color of the textbook, no?
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem like that to you?
It really does. Mind you, he couldn't remember the name of the Japanese prime minister yesterday, and she's his biggest fan. He was hugging her, practically French kissing her in the White House.
It's not just necessary to know the name of the person you are kissing, it seems, for him.
He is increasingly forgetful, a la Biden, but he... people are posting memes of him as a psychiatric patient, and the doctor is asking him, these Iranians you're negotiating with, are they in the room with us now? we're really into mental health territory. That's what I'm saying. So he doesn't know, I don't believe, and therefore none of us can know. The important point is he is putting boots in the area who may end up on the ground. They may end up under the ground, I'm sorry to say, for their sake, for their parents' sake. But not enough to invade Iran. Iran is 93 million people.
Right.
And in Iwo Jima, which the pundits like to compare it with, although they don't tell people that 26,000 Americans died taking the island of Iwo Jima in the Second World War, but they also don't say that there were 75,000 U.S. Marines in that operation, and Trump is putting 2,500, or maybe 5,000.
Right.
And that was not in the age where your enemy had ballistic missiles, hypersonic ballistic missiles, drone technology that is incomparable in the world, mm-hmm. and people who are more than ready to die fighting you.
Because that's their soil. That's their motherland, you know, they're fighting for.
It's existential for them. They're not fighting for the price of petrol at the pump. They're not fighting for the Dow. They're fighting for their very existence. Not just the existence of their revolution, which is very important to them. Tens of millions of Iranians are highly religious people. But for the existence of their country, because they know that if they fall, there will be no more Iran. It will be balkanized, it will be broken up, it will be Yugoslavized. You'll have two, three, four, five different countries will be created as a result. So what you have now is a confluence of Islamist Iranians and Iranian nationalists who believe in the territorial integrity of their country. And they've made, therefore, a very powerful enemy indeed, and one which will go forever. I keep hearing, oh, they're going to send a nuke. What will that achieve, apart from lowering the nuclear threshold to a level it has never been at before, apart from making sure everybody in the world who can get nuclear weapons will then get them, mm-hmm. apart from the radiation, apart from the flash, apart from the nuclear winter, that's not going to achieve anything. Mm-hmm. You're not going to destroy a country of 93 million people with one nuclear weapon, or even two. So the war will continue, and it will continue with their teeth if necessary. They'll fight the invader, and the invader isn't there in enough numbers to conquer the country. But it will sure as heck make sure that all these Arab countries that gave Trump so much, so many diamonds and pearls and 747s and investments for the son-in-law and all of that, none of these countries will exist anymore.
So, and to that, I wanted to just ask about Israel. There are people saying that actually in America, a soft coup has taken place, or a hard coup, if you want to say, that actually it's not just that Trump's mentally ill, he's compromised, and that Israel is actually running, it's sort of wagged the dog. Initially, America was running the Middle East through Israel. Now Israel's running America. What do you think of that theory?
I honestly see America and Israel as the same country.
Okay. I see, you don't see the separation?
Not really. Okay. I think the CIA and the Mossad are one thing. The American state and the Israeli state are one thing. And so for me, Israel is the 51st state of the United States. But of course, there's room for disagreement on who's running whom. Mm-hmm. And when you've got a guy like Trump in the White House and a guy like Netanyahu, if he indeed is still alive, running things in Tel Aviv, or in occupied Jerusalem, then you can't really say where one begins and the other ends. But undoubtedly, they are dragging the American people to disaster. This whole war was fought for them. But there's no Israeli troops en route to the invasion of Iran. It's always the American boys and girls nowadays who give their lives in Israel's wars. And you don't have to take my word for that. Marco Rubio told us in remarks that he was then told to walk back, but in the age of the internet, you can't walk them back. Mm-hmm. He said them. He said, we went into this war because we believed Iran was about to attack Israel. And I don't think Iran was about to attack Israel. I don't think Iran wants anything other than strategic parity in the area, so that neither side can attack each other. Whereas for decades now, Iran has been invading, sending missiles, assassinating scientists, politicians in Iran without so much as a second thought. Well, Iran wanted to end that state of affairs. Mm. And I believe they've now achieved that. Despite the censorship, the state of Tel Aviv in particular, but Haifa, a close second, is phenomenal. It looks like Gaza. And that's one of the greatest ironies of them all.
George, but do you think it may be this decision to put boots on the ground? And most of the experts, they said it's suicidal. But still, we see Trump is going for it. Mm-hmm. Do you think it may end up as a second Vietnam? Because from what I know, those supporting the invasion are even less than at the times of the Vietnamese war. So for do you sure. think they may end up in the second Vietnam?
Well, even if the politicians don't want it to, ineluctably, that's what happens. Once you've invested the lives of 8,000, 20, 50,000 of your men, you have to invest more. Very few political leaders or military leaders can avoid the temptation of reinforcing failure. The more it fails, the more you have to put in. Until
it's like a casino, by the casino effect.
Yeah. By the end, you're there, not just because you're there to guard the graves of those that were there in the first place. So ineluctably, that's what would happen. But Iran is much bigger than Vietnam. It's five times bigger than Vietnam. And it has a population of 93 million. It's the youngest population in the world. Mm. It has the largest number of people under 35 in the whole world. Mm. Tens of millions of them are fanatic Muslims, and tens of millions of them are fanatic Iranian nationalists. They're super nationalistic, you know.
I mean, they were forced to.
And when you're the heir of a 5,000-year-old civilization, I guess you're going to be. And you're being threatened with destruction, with all respect to you, Tara, and the good people of America. You're threatened with cowboys who've only been around 5 minutes, historically speaking.
Although I now have my Russian citizenship, so I can claim Russia, too.
indeed. But, I mean, they're bombing Isfahan, for example. Mm-hmm. They're bombing holy places, historic places, World Heritage sites in places in Iran, like Isfahan.
In the Third Temple, there was talk that Israel's goal was to destroy.
This is one of the most bizarre of these things. We have this eschatological mania in the United States now. You've got America has an ambassador who believes in an interpretation of a Bible not even 125 years old, which was written by men. With a point of view. And that Bible, they say openly, is guiding them to Armageddon, literally to Armageddon. I've been in Armageddon, by the way. It's not called Megiddo. It's not far from Gaza, actually. Mm-hmm. It's nothing much to look at. And I'm not in a hurry to go back there. I quite like the world the way it is, how God gave it to us. But these people are determined to bring about the end of times. And this Pete Hegseth, the Defense Secretary of the United States, I mean, he's covered in tattoos of Crusader tattoos. And and the Christianity that he believes in is so bizarre. It's very different to my own.
Yes.
It's very different to the Christianity of most of us. We didn't think that the Prince of Peace wanted people to slaughter each other in order to bring him back. That's not the Christianity that we knew. On this Third Temple, Jesus was crucified for calling for the destruction of the existing temple at the time. That was the charge. The Pharisees brought the charge and found him guilty and went to Pontius Pilate for a decision, which he wouldn't give because it was Passover. They believed that Jesus would be obviously freed by the people. One condemned man on Passover was always freed, but the high priest said, no, free Barabbas. And the charge against Jesus was that he had called for the destruction of that temple. That's the very wall that American politicians go to kiss and be pictured at. I mean, you can't run for president if you've not kissed the wall. And I know Jerusalem very well. 55 yards from that wall is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where Jesus was laid. Have you ever seen an American politician go there and kiss the stone where Jesus was laid? I never have. It's one of the most bizarre turn of theological events that I have ever seen.
It actually seems that Christianity is getting a wrong turn. Because have you heard, I've heard about at least 150 complaints of US Marines against their commanders that they are calling for a crusade. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
It's happening right now in the US Army.
There was a sermon given by military officers that we're doing this to bring Jesus back. Mm-hmm. As if God can be commanded by men. That would mean they were God. Yes. If their actions could bring God back to the earth, that makes them God, not God. I mean, it's sacrilege. I don't want to divert you all with theological, but the theological is one of the more interesting.
But it seems it's really interesting.
It's all intertwined right now. And I mean, Tucker Carlson's been pointing that out. And speaking of which, they're talking about criminally investigating him because he's been speaking out against Israel. Charlie Kirk, as you know, and I was on his show twice, Charlie's show, and knew him, was murdered in front of everyone on camera. For criticizing Israel, and there's a lot of discussion that his murder's not been effectively investigated.
There would have been an order not to look
into it. Yeah, and then of course you have
his own wife doesn't seem that keen to find out who
Erica
killed
Kirk,
him.
Right? And then his, and then of course you had the security head in the United States, Joe Kent, 11-time, a tour of Iraq, and who was a hero and lost his wife in war, very anti-war, believed Trump, and so did Tulsi Gabbard, that Trump was going to be about peace and not these endless wars. And Trump himself, time and time again, had talked about not going to war with Iran. What now you're watching these people that are speaking out against Trump, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tucker Carlson, getting persecuted, and you yourself have been speaking out. What do you think about free speech in Europe and in America, and what's happening?
Well, in America, you're supposed to have constitutional guarantees of it,
yes,
but
First Amendment.
That's increasingly in doubt.
Right.
Is there anybody now who doesn't believe that Israel was involved in the murder of Charlie Kirk? I can't see how you could.
Right.
He was the most significant opponent of a war with Iran. Mm-hmm. They knew a war with Iran was in the offing, so they had to get rid of him. And my God, what a gruesome murder it was. And whoever was involved in killing him, it wasn't some trans guy with a furry tail who did this on his own. It's
exactly.
More ludicrous than the Lee Harvey Oswald JFK allegation. But free speech, I can only speak most clearly about Britain, but it's a Western phenomenon, is being murdered. Now, I mean, here I am in Moscow, I'm leaving tomorrow, but this is exactly what they used to say about Moscow, that you couldn't
That's
speak,
the irony.
You couldn't speak freely.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't oppose the government.
Right.
Whereas we in the West, our USP, unique selling point, was freedom.
Right.
Well, now, freedom in the West is like a distant memory. There's a generation growing up who actually have never experienced a time when you could freely speak your mind. It was always oversold, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I can say, as someone who was in the British Parliament across 5 decades from the 1980s until a little over a year ago, they gave you freedom of speech as long as nobody was listening to you. But when they started listening to you, the free speech began to be withdrawn.
Right.
But nonetheless, what a bizarre turn of events that someone like me, 7 times elected, one of the best known people in the country, 71 years old, gets arrested by 5 armed police officers on my return from Nizhny Novgorod, where I attended the World Youth Festival.
In Russia, just for viewers who may not know.
Yes, in which I did not meet a single Russian statesman or politician or official of any kind. I was talking to youth from Bolivia and from around the world. And I could not believe my eyes when I saw them advancing towards me with their guns.
Mm.
You have to know that the airport was full, and everybody in airports in England knows who I am.
Right, of course.
And they see me being taken away.
Yeah, treated in such a manner.
My wife also, although I didn't know she was also under arrest, under the terrorism laws, they held her for 6 hours and me for five. Hmm. So a total of 11 hours between the two of us, took all our stuff, took all and copied everything on our phones, mm-hmm. personal pictures, legal correspondence, in my case, parliamentary correspondence.
Isn't that class? Or, I mean, they can't take that. Don't you have some immunity?
There's some of it is not usable. Wow. But not usable is not the same as not knowable. So right. When they know things, even if they can't use it, they use what they know to go certain places. So I decided there and then. Indeed, I told the police officer. I said, you have just driven my wife and me from my country, because my wife, who has no reason to be in Britain other than being the mother of three British children and the husband of a prominent British politician, she will not stay in a country where she's treated like this. So we are now in exile in the East, and I must say Moscow in the spring, it's quite a place to be.
It is.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear that.
When I went into exile, I came in the spring, and it lures you in, the lilacs, the lilacs in the spring. And I remember that was one of our first meetings in person.
Indeed.
Because we'd met on Zoom, but not in person. Yes. And and you met me when I just went into political asylum.
Yeah.
Now I have my citizenship. But what...
I'm hoping to return in triumph.
Yes. Good. What are your hopes?
Another election victory. And let's see if they arrest an elected member of parliament at the airport. Yep. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I mean, as it happens, ironically, this government in Britain, which is more or less in a state of war with Russia now, you know, they took a mm-hmm. decision yesterday that they're going to begin boarding Russian tankers.
What?
Yeah. This is a country that...
I did not know that.
Yeah. This is a country that can't keep the lights on. A country mm-hmm. that is disappearing in a whirlpool down the drain, but we're still going to board Russian tankers. Now, I can't speak for Russia, and I don't know what Russia's attitude will be, but if I was in the Kremlin, I'd be saying to London, the minute you board a Russian tanker will be the minute a state of war exists between us and you.
George, speaking about Russian, since I'm a Russian citizen, born here, raised up here, I cannot raise another issue. Have you heard in an interview the spokeswoman of Israeli Defense Forces, okay, when asked about the traffic cameras, she made a hint that they may go after Russian officials if they wish ill to Israel. And luckily, they don't wish ill now. Have you heard of that? What is that?
Well, if they can fire a missile deliberately at two RT crew, mm-hmm. my good friend Steve Sweeney, member of my party for some time before he left the country, and Ali Rida, his admirable cameraman, if Israel will do that to Russia, okay, neither of these is a Russian citizen, but it was a Russian television, then why would they not? These people were born in terrorism. The truck bomb was invented by the terrorists that set up the State of Israel. Count Bernadotte, the United Nations envoy, who had saved thousands of Jews in the Second World War, by the way, was murdered by them in Jerusalem. Lord Moyne, Churchill's private envoy, was murdered by them. The King David Hotel was one of the most spectacular acts of terrorism at the time. 93 British officials were killed. They sent someone to murder Churchill in Whitehall when he was fighting Adolf Hitler in the Second World War. So terrorism is second nature to these people who founded and now run, the extremists who now run Israel. They killed Rabin, their own prime minister, because he tried to make a peace agreement. Mm-hmm. And the person who pulled the trigger was a Netanyahu fanatic. And these people, these extremists, the Likud they're called now, but in the past they were the Stern gang, the Ergun gang. These people have been running Israel now for decades, so I wouldn't at all be surprised.
Doesn't it look for you, you know, as this euphoria of serial killers, you know, when they murder people, mm-hmm. when they assassinate them, they feel this blood, and then they cannot stop, you know, and they feel this boundless impunity, so they can only go after more and more victims. Doesn't it sound like that to you?
It feels very much like that.
Like Lindsey Graham's
They have the culture of impunity because they have impunity. Nobody ever punishes them for doing anything. They reward them, on the other hand.
Yeah.
They give them more money, more weapons, more diplomatic cover at the United Nations and in FIFA and all the rest. Look at how...
Yeah, where are the sanctions? Yeah, where is that?
Look at the sanctions against Russia and ask yourself, where are the sanctions against Israel? There are no sanctions. There's only endless rewards. So I'm fond of the phrase, I may even have coined it, they will not stop until they're stopped. And it's up to the rest of us to stop them. You can't leave it to the people in Israel. They've drunk the Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. A surgeon cannot operate on his own foot. He needs another surgeon to operate on it. And that surgeon has to be us. We have to stop endlessly rewarding Israel, start punishing Israel, or this will never stop. They won't stop till they're stopped.
I just hope if the United States face the situation that they went through in the Vietnam War, maybe that would be a lesson, at least for a while. But we should ask Tara, if U.S. citizen or U.S. officials, they learned this lesson, if they ever remember about that. I mean, or it was all lost somewhere in the sand, you know?
I think there's a loss of education, but also, you know, AIPAC, the lobbying arm of Israel, funds 90% of the politicians. So history doesn't even matter to these people. They're looking at their pocketbooks, and they're looking at the military-industrial complex that they're being funded with as well. And so you're talking 90% of Congress, U.S. Congress people and U.S. senators, and yet AIPAC has not had to file as a foreign agent. But they're lobbying for their interests. They say it openly. You can see it on Twitter. They brag about it, that they own. So I, you know, as much as I hope, George, that there's some change, it's not going to come from Americans because all their money comes, you know, like there's rumors that Trump received $400 million personally and for his family to enter this war.
Well, and then if you begin to count out what he was given personally through the son-in-law as well,
Jared Kushner.
From the Gulf.
Jared Kushner.
Monarchies,
Who's supposed to be the diplomat who's negotiating with Russia.
But
how does Russia trust?
I want to ask you, finish the question.
Yeah, I mean, they own the politicians, but they don't own the people. And if the people elect better politicians, for example, Thomas Massie, accepts zero from the Israel lobby. He's one of a tiny handful. Mm-hmm. Trump has moved heaven and earth to destroy him. Mm-hmm. And Miriam Adelson and the other big pro-Israel donors in the U.S. have expended unprecedented amounts of money. Mm-hmm. But he's still going to win because there's a turn of events. There's a time in the tide of men. Mm-hmm. And if you take it at the flood, you can go far. And I think that Massie will win. I think he'll win by a landslide. Because there's a sea change going on in the American public, even amongst American Jews. American Jews, for the first time, disapprove rather than approve of Israel. Mm-hmm. And the younger the American Jew, the more they disapprove. And the American public as a whole, you see the graph. It has completely changed. So I have hopes for the Americans. But the politicians, you're right, they're bought and paid for. People we've never heard of before. In my case, representing areas that I've never heard of before.
are receiving $3, 4, or 5 million from Israel. Now, it's a good investment for them, but it's still one hell of a lot of money for John Doe, congressman for the boondocks.
In Louisiana or something, yeah.
Is receiving literally millions. Right. It's bizarre for me as a British politician because our spending limits are so small. You cannot spend $20,000 in total in your entire election campaign.
Oh.
So there's no point in buying us because we can, it's worse. Our people are doing, our politicians are doing it, not even for the money. They're doing it because they like it. Mm. They like the sight of the suffering. Mm. But in America, the numbers are eye-watering.
Can I ask you about the negotiations? I mean, negotiations on Ukraine and on President Putin, because the negotiations are ongoing. We've just heard from Kirill Dmitriev, Russian president's representative on the negotiations. So, like, the negotiations are going on, and I've heard Trump speaking out very positively about President Putin, like, in the middle of all that going on. Mm-hmm. So do you think he may respect Russian president as a sovereign leader, because there are not that many in the world? And despite, you know, being across the ocean, like on the different sides of the ocean, there is some feeling of respect, at least from what I see, towards Putin. What do you think of that?
Well, I wanted Trump to win the presidency rather than Kamala Harris precisely for that reason. I supported Dr. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, but I knew that she wasn't going to win. And of the other two, I wanted Trump to win rather than Harris because I believe we would be in World War III with Russia if she won. So I wanted Trump to win rather than her for that reason. I don't know what self-interest is involved. I don't know if it is just chemistry, but he definitely seems to have a soft spot for President Putin. But more importantly, they know that Russia holds all the cards. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trump himself said to little Zelensky, the thief of Kiev, "You don't have any cards." Now, that's a recognition of reality. The Russian Federation holds all the cards. So maybe it's just that Trump, as a deal maker, wants to salvage the best that he can for his own interests from a negotiated end to the conflict in Ukraine. But I'm not at all sure it's going to happen, at least not a settlement that would make it worth the sacrifice that the Russian people have made in this special military operation. I mean, a settlement which meant only that your sons have to fight this war again in 20 years is not really a settlement that would have been worth the trouble. So Russia's demands, which are just and legitimate, as I've said from the beginning, at some cost, will have to be met. And that must include an absolutely neutral Ukraine. Not just Ukraine not in NATO, that's not neutrality. Neutrality means post-war Austria, it means post-Second World War Finland. It means that nothing will be done by any existing Ukrainian state that comes after this that will in any way be hostile or prejudicial to Russia. And so an absolutely neutral Ukraine and an absolute recognition that the Russian-speaking people of Eastern Ukraine have come back to Russia of their own choice, of their own volition. It's a matter of self-determination. How could you abandon the Russian speakers of Kharkov? I believe also of Odessa. How could you abandon them to rule from a hostile regime in Kiev? You can't. If they're going to remain in a Ukrainian state rather than in Novorossiya, it'll have to be a very different kind of Ukrainian state. and one which is genuinely neutral and treats all of its citizens with equal respect.
George, since we are really running out of time, but I cannot help asking you the last question, probably, as a mom.
The topic
that really struck me is this euthanasia of a 25-year-old girl in Spain. We discussed Christianity that seems to have taken a wrong turn somewhere.
Yes.
So, from what we know, the girl had been raped a while ago by a group of teens or guys. And she chose this path. And where's Europe is sliding to if the girl is killed while the rapists never ever faced a trial? What do you think of it? Where is Europe sliding? That's my question. I have goosebumps. I have a girl, a teen daughter.
I have a daughter as well.
I cannot even think of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the West is in the midst of the grip of death, the cult of death. I mean, half of all pregnancies in Britain are aborted while we have a demographic crisis with not enough young people being born to support the aging population. And we have spent in the British Parliament 300 hours debating state-assisted suicide, where when your grandma becomes a burden, or is encouraged to think of herself as a burden, just slip in here, grandma, here's a glass of sherry, and we'll put you to death. This has now morphed, that's bad enough.
Yeah.
This has now morphed to a new act in the British Parliament, which would, for example, allow a 16-year-old anorexic girl.
It's not a lethal disease.
No. Why not cure the anorexia?
Yeah.
Instead of allowing an anorexic girl to kill herself, or rather assist the anorexic girl to kill herself. Why not cure the depression that is so prevalent amongst young people and older people, rather than assist them to die? Now, as Shakespeare said...
Where is Christianity here?
Well, exactly.
Where is humanity here? It's like Europe was pretending to be the most humane, like, in the world, setting the standard of human rights.
They
humanely
conquered all these territories in the world. They humanely enslaved people. Mm-hmm. The king of the Belgians humanely reduced the Congo population by half. The more they talked of their humanity, the faster I counted my spoons, as Oscar Wilde would say. But the truth is that the Western society is becoming enveloped by evil. It's a kind of Satanism.
It is.
That's why so many people are now moving to Russia under the family values scheme.
Yeah.
Because this is practically...
Traditional values. Serbia
is an exception. But this is the last place in Europe that the family, that love of God, that reverence for Jesus and the saints and the prophets.
And life, is, I mean, in the end.
Yeah, life.
Just
yeah.
life, not euthanasia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a cult of life in Russia. There's a cult of death in the West. And the case you mentioned... Mm-hmm. has everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
How men can get away with violence against women, including, forgive me, rape, which you yourself suffered at the hands of a vile man, and where the victim is punished and the perpetrator is lauded and protected.
It's amazing.
And it has the euthanasia issue. What kind of doctor would sign off assisting the suicide of a young girl who suffered that fate at the hands of these rapists?
Exactly.
Doesn't that contradict the whole Hippocratic oath? Do no harm. How much more harm can you do? I was just going to say on the issue of Christianity, Shakespeare himself in Hamlet, where the prince is discussing with Horatio, he says about suicide, the Lord hath set his canon against self-slaughter. This is Shakespeare, yeah, hundreds of years ago,
right,
saying the Lord forbids slaughtering yourself.
Right.
Now we've got parliamentarians in the West that speak about nothing else.
I know.
But suicide and death. And you wonder why I'm in exile? You wonder why I'm sitting here in Moscow?
I'm not wondering.
And you know, I have another question because you have been involved with the Communist Party. Now Trump has set his sights on Cuba. What are your thoughts about his assertion? They're saying it's within weeks that they're going to go in to Cuba and take over or whatever. What are you hearing about this, and what are your thoughts?
Cuba will never die. It will certainly never die without taking hundreds of thousands of its invaders down with it. I don't believe that China and Russia will allow Cuba to die. Hmm. Fidel Castro was a friend of mine. He was the greatest man I ever met by a long chalk. Mm-hmm. I'm his biographer. So Cuba's in my bloodstream. And I have every confidence that the Cuban people will surmount this crisis as they have surmounted so many before. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, we had in Cuba what was called the special period, which was the darkest period, were literally dark. There was no light anywhere. The collapse of the Soviet Union ought to have been the death of Cuba, but it was not. I'm fond of this. Again, I made it up myself. Mm-hmm. According to the laws of aerodynamics, the bumblebee cannot fly. It's too heavy. Mm-hmm. Its wings are too small. Aerodynamically, it cannot small, but it cannot fly, but it flies. And a very beautiful sight it is, too. By the laws of economics and politics and geopolitics, Cuba should have collapsed along with the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. But it did not. And Cuba remains a hope in the world. And I believe it will continue to do so.
That's a note to leave our conversation at.
Yes, thank you.
Because that's much what we have time for. But we'd be really happy to have you on our show.
It was beautiful. I enjoyed it. I wish we could continue.
Yeah. We will.
Maybe next time.
We will, of course.
Yeah, we will.
So that's what we have time for. But please stay in touch with us on social media. Send us your guest suggestions. Maybe the questions that you want but don't dare to ask. We'll do it for you here on East Meets West.
We'll see you next time. Please follow us on X and Telegram. And we look forward to being with you again. Peace out.
Take care. Bye.